Keep Talking exists to have conversations that might help to make a better society and a better culture. I believe that each guest has important information and stories to make public. This is the Keep Talking podcast. To support it, please take a second and subscribe to the show. It helps to make this content possible. I want to start with a very simple question, which I know you go into in detail in your work and in your writing. How did you get into men's work in the first place?
Oh, man. Well, first, like I had the classic, I'm about to turn 40. My life is, quote, perfect. I'm the guy who has it all. And 2 months later, lost it all. I was that guy 8 years ago. And I was married, had a kid on the way, had a business that I love that I built with a partner from the ground up. I was living in Santa Barbara, California. Like life was good. And my ex-wife miscarried, which led into a divorce, which led immediately for other reasons into a business separation or like dissolution. And so I suddenly was standing there, as so many men find themselves doing around this age point, going, oh shit, everything I thought I wanted, I got, and now I've lost it. And let's put on some honest goggles here and go, wait a minute, I was kind of miserable, but not on the surface, having gotten everything that I wanted. I was a chronic pot smoker, chronic porn user, steady drinker, unconscious, lying to my partner, nice guy, afraid of conflict, no emotional intelligence, no understanding of relational skill, just kind of lost as a man. Like truly, I checked every box along the way. Went to college, played sports, went to grad school, had a degree, had a job, had the wife, had the kid, you know, like checked all the boxes. But along the way, no one had ever asked, like, are you okay? And is this what you really want? Or is this just the program that you were kind of born into and plugged into and never stopped long enough to check in and say, is this what I actually want? So a year into this loss process, I pick up a book called To Be a Man by Robert Masters and read it cover to cover, Dan, on a flight, and was like, holy shit, what is going on here? Why is this guy talking about men like there are specific patterns for us, like there are specific inclinations for us? Why, if we do certain things, our lives end up better. If we don't do certain things, our lives end up more challenging. He went into all of it. And I was so mesmerized. Like it was revolutionary. It was as if I had been 50 pounds overweight my entire life. And suddenly someone was like, hey, do you know if you move your body in these certain ways and you eat these foods, you will lose the weight? And I'd never heard of exercise before, and I'd never heard of diet. It was that revolutionary to me. And so I looked him up, and lo and behold, he was doing a workshop in Santa Barbara, California, my little hometown of, 60,000 people. And so I was like, oh, shit, I gotta go to this, and went to it. And what I thought was going to be a lecture of, I brought a notebook and pen. And what it was 8 dudes in a yurt for 5 days doing deep, deep emotional work, which on day one, I was like, get me the fuck out of here right now. I'm locked in a yurt with 7 crazy people. 3 of them are having emotions, which I'm not comfortable with. So get me out. And instead I stayed, and I had been served divorce papers the night before. So I was raw. I had a hole in my chest. I was heartbroken and distressed. And I left that workshop 5 days later, still with a hole in my heart, but every other part of me felt more whole, whole, than I had at any point in my life. And it was like, the way I describe it now to men in my own workshops, it was as if I had spent my entire life not knowing I had a right arm. And I learned to open jars and open doors and throw balls with my left arm. But now suddenly, boom, I have 2 fucking hands. Think of how different your life would be if you didn't know you had a right arm and you woke up tomorrow morning and suddenly it was there. So that just, it piqued my interest and it got me interested in doing men's work. And then I fell, it's another story if you want to get into it. I just fell into actually doing it myself. Like, I just thought this would be something cool. I'm going to do it for me. Like, I like jujitsu. I like surfing. I'm now going to do this men's work thing. But it grabbed me and it grabbed my soul. And pretty soon after, it was inevitable that, like, I couldn't do anything else.
Incredible. I really appreciate you sharing all that. And I do want to get into your decision to dedicate yourself to men's work in general. I would love to back up a little bit. And, you know, I mentioned this before we started recording. One of the things I love so much about your presentation and your writing is just the genuineness that shines through, your genuineness, the honesty of your experience. And, you know, I would love, I'm sure you've thought about this, but the picture you painted, the successful 40-year-old that now you look back upon as more of an unconscious version of yourself who was engaged in all the activities that you described. How do you make sense of how you became that person? I want to get obviously into your later years after this transition and this heartbreak that you alluded to, but that path to being a quote unquote successful person who actually wasn't doing very well. Mm-hmm. How do you make sense of that in your own mind and in your own life?
I think that the image I have, Dan, is like a fish in a fishbowl and you ask it, what's water? It's like, I don't know what water is. This is my daily reality. And the more perhaps intelligent answer is I was just unconscious. I didn't know there was a way to step back and actually look and feel into and at my life and ask questions about it. I was on the hamster wheel. There was no time. There was no space. There was no interrupt. I hadn't had a parent die, you know, the terminal illness, the car accident that changed my life. I'd never had an interrupt. So I just followed the standard civilized track of this is what you're supposed to do. And there's a big societal marketing agency and it's got pressure that's unbelievable to belong, to fit in, to be with the in-group, to do the things that you're quote supposed to do, to follow my family system. It would be revolutionary, I think, to have stepped out of that process. But truly, the way I view it is it was just unconsciousness, right? Carl Jung says there's no coming to consciousness without pain. And I there's some other line too, which I'll botch, so don't quote me on this, guys, that like if you're off track of your psyche and your soul, I'm not talking about what your head is or what the neighborhood you grew up conditioned you with, but like something deeper, some deeper information. If you're not pursuing that track that I'm meant to be on, then your unconscious will burn this thing to the ground or life will burn it to the ground, right? I have a good friend, Asher Pacman, who says life speaks to us with a feather, a brick, and then a freight train. And I think I'm a freight train guy, Dan, because, you know, when all of that happened, you know, 8-10 years ago, I remember thinking, this is too big for me, the person, to squirm my way out of. It's too big for me to ignore. The pain is too big. It's bigger than I am. I'd never dealt with a biblical, you know, like a thing that was bigger than me. And so when I got knocked over, I couldn't outdrink it, outfuck it, outsmoke it, outjerk it, outexercise it, outwork it. All of my coping mechanisms and survival mechanisms were useless against something that big. So what it did was knock me down to a place of saying, okay, something new is going to emerge from this scenario. I can either do what everybody around me is telling me to do, which is get remarried, open another gym, and have another kid within 6 months. I remember someone actually saying, dude, this can all be gone in 6 months, right? You can be back on track. And I had this deep knowing, Dan, that if I did that, I would be right back there 3 years later or 4 years later. Because what also was highlighted, if I'll add, is I took a look in the mirror and went, hey, man, you drink a lot. You smoke a lot of dope. Do we really want to be looking at porn at 40? Is this how I want my relationships? I have this deep ache in my heart to write, to speak, to be on stages. I've had this for decades. Why was that not important enough to come forward? And how come it feels like this is the only possible way to survive this situation is to grow and transform into that man who expresses himself that way?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It does. It does. And you mentioned a book earlier that I want to circle back to, which is To Be a Man.
Yeah.
And that, you know, as I understand it, you were able to connect with the author live in Santa Barbara. What do you remember? You said you read that book cover to cover on a flight. The big takeaways for you, what information, what passages, what in general about that book blew your mind and really resonated with you that you remember?
I think it's more of an overarching idea, Dan. And he would say, like, as a man, you, as men, we, men do X. When men are in integrity, integrity is a big thing for us. Thoughts, words, actions, and alignment. Like we go to war for that. The feminine and women, maybe not so much. It's more of emotion in the moment. He described about what happens in our inner worlds, right? He wrote another book, I think, called Emotional Intelligence or Emotional Intimacy, perhaps. He talked about our relationship to porn. He talked about our relationship to addiction, about our relationship to alcohol. And he talked about it in a way that was almost mythopoetic, where he spoke about men as if we were an entity. Not about me, the individual guy who just happens to be born with certain chromosomes, and that's why I'm a man. Hmm. Right? So it laid out the first couple steps for a pathway. Like, it's a path. Here's a path that if you follow as a man, your life will be better. And I just never heard that before. Right? Hmm. And his talk, I'll circle back to the two. I think the biggest thing, when he talked about, he said this, if you're a porn user, it's like, if you took the sexual charge out of porn, of like, man, I'm horny, so I'm looking at porn. If you just had to look at it from almost a scientific perspective, what are you watching? Oh, you're into MILF porn. You're watching a mom with a younger guy. Okay, if you took the sex out of that, you're watching nurturance. You're watching a maternal giving. If you're watching BDSM porn and it's violent and it's dominant and you take the sex out of it, you're watching a consensual abuse. There's some part of you that needs to express itself that way. And as an intellectual person and a contemplative person, that was fascinating to me. The eroticism of wounds, of like, oh, I don't necessarily get off to this thing because I'm just naturally, quote, wired to like women with large breasts. There's almost like a mythological thing going of saying, oh, the breasts represent the maternal. I'm seeking the maternal. Now, I know that may sound really weird to guys who are like, man, I just like Pornhub, like don't overanalyze it. But it hit me. And it made me start to think of how else am I expressing my inner world in my outer world? And how am I as a man not getting what I need and living in a way that will actually support my life to be this thing that I've wanted it to be for so long? So I think it also felt like the answer to a question I'd been asking for ages. I just didn't know what the question was. Which was like, why aren't things working the way I want them to? Why aren't I satisfied? I had every damn box checked in the successful box category. Why did I need to drink, smoke, get high, jerk off, exercise twice? Like, what was going on with me? And no one had ever said, do you know who you are as a man? No one ever asked me that. Ever. Who am I? Right? These are the two questions that came out of that awful period of my life. Who am I? Which is like a lifelong, yeah, I don't think you ever get rid of that question.
Yeah.
Who am I as a man? It was like a, whoa, wait a minute. I get the first question as a philosophical meditation for life, but like, who am I as a what? A man. I grew up in a house where being a man wasn't okay. I got some work here to do. And now here, if we fast forward 8 years, I know who I am as a man. I know what my wants as a man are, what my needs are as a man, what makes me operate as a man. I understand brotherhood as a man. I understand who I am as a man, as a businessman, as a partner, as a sexual being, as a human. Now, all of that knowledge comes with me into every interaction that I have, and it also sits with me when I'm by myself. So I think what the book did was highlight this giant vacancy and this giant vacuity, this like, hey, there's this missing part of your human experience as a dude. Come here, pull me aside. Hey, welcome to the room. Did you know that men X, Y, Z? And it was, that's why I think it was so impactful, as opposed to anything that just particular, other than the porn stuff grabbed me. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, fair enough. There's a quote I would love to read from your book.
Sure.
Man Uncivilized. And you just alluded to this earlier, which I think is rather pithy and well-worded. And the quote is, quote, integrity is when our thoughts, words, and our actions are in alignment. And, yeah. You know, I'd love to have this conversation be, you know, largely for men and for men that sure. are seeking out content like this, because they may be where you were when you were roughly 40. I just turned 40 in April. I have plenty of friends who are divorced, have had their lives upended, that, you know, are probably yeah. going through a second act of life that yeah. I don't know if this is how you think about that transition for yourself, but it almost seems like a second opportunity to create yourself.
For sure.
And, you know, I know you answered this largely with your last question, but you mentioned earlier that going to this retreat and reading these books, it felt like you had, for the first time, had use of both arms, and that what you were capable of after learning how to use a second arm, what skills you might need to develop, opened up this new world for you. This is a long-winded way of me opening up a conversation during this chat about what you might provide as guidance for men that feel similarly to where you were when you were 40, for habits that are common in modern society that may be derailing men, mm-hmm. and how men can begin to go about really seemingly getting more aligned with really themselves and who they are as a person.
Oof. Beautiful question. And it's a biggie. Thanks. I think what, for guys who are at a point, it happens 35 to 45. I don't know why. This isn't my jam. I watch it every day. So I believe it to be true. There's often, I'm going to use this word specifically, an initiation coming. And an initiation is a controlled death by definition. A part of who you were up until this point will die. A part of who you have always been that hasn't been able to express itself will come to the surface if you let it. Does that make sense? So the easiest reference for this is, we don't go through a formal initiation, but every guy who's 40 has gone through puberty. Puberty is supposed to represent like the death of boyhood and the entrance into, quote, manhood. Again, we'll leave that to the side, but so guys can get that. Like, you're not the same dude who you were when you were 10. You're not interested in the same things. You're not curious about the same things. You don't look the same. You're pursuing different interests, etc. And yet part of you is still the same guy. So what happens a lot at 35 to 45 is there is some kind of initiation. It's a divorce. It's a job loss. It's the birth of a child. It's the death of a child. It's the death of a parent. It's an illness. It's the recovery of an illness. It's some big milestone event that literally the day before and the day after you will be different. And not just, I'm a different thinker. Like, I was a different human after my divorce. I was a different human after that time period. Different. Like, the things I'm interested in. Like, dude, is there a through line still? Do I still love surfing and jujitsu and boobs? Absolutely. But who do I now write professionally as opposed to teaching kettlebell swings? You guys see the difference? Do I meditate now for sometimes 2 hours a day as opposed to drinking? You see the difference? Mm. Are the conversations I'm having and what I'm interested in completely different? Absolutely. Do I now have access to a level of power? And I use that again consciously. Consciousness and awareness that's radically different than it was 8 years ago. Yes. So I'm going to circle back to your original question, but I wanted to talk about initiation because I think understanding initiation will save a lot of guys' lives. A big causal factor in suicide is divorce, or like the big breakup, right? The big one, not at 19, you dated for 6 weeks and she's gone. The big one. But if we could look at it as an initiation of saying, hey, here's what's going to happen. We were up here. Some factor comes in that's out of our control that's going to knock us down here to rock bottom. We're going to have to lay low. We're going to have to wallow down here for a minute. And this area is ripe with gems. I found sobriety on rock bottom. I found writing on rock bottom. I found men's work on rock bottom. What am I still doing 8 years later? Not drinking, writing professionally, running an international men's organization. I also found who I am, that I have needs, that I have wants, that I have longings. I found my heart. I know how to be in relationship with people now. And I'm going to use a big word, and it's going to scare a lot of people. I got in touch with my soul. I'm not a religious person. I'm not a dogmatic person. I don't care who you pray to. There's some part of us, a depth to us, that when we get to tap into that information and tap into that energy and tap into who we are at our deepest core and express ourselves from that point forward, our lives as men will be radically different. And so now to bring it back to integrity, it's paramount for us to feel good, to feel, I'm going to use this word, alive, to have aliveness in our body, to have energy in our body. Everybody listening to this at some point has woken up and been like, I don't know. I just feel fucking great today. Mm. And we've all woken up and been like, I don't know. I got 12 hours of sleep and all I want to do is watch Game of Thrones and lie on the couch. No aliveness, aliveness. When we have our thoughts, our words, and our actions in alignment, Dan, I tell you that I want to lose 10 pounds. So I think about going to the gym and what can I do for this workout? I tell you that. And then I get my ass up and I go to the gym. That's integrity. If I tell you I want to go to the gym, but I think like, nah, that sounds really bad. I don't know. It's super duper hard. And I skip going, I'm out of integrity. As a man, I will feel bad. I will have less aliveness. My video game character will be on like half battery. If I go to the gym that day, just because I said I would, and I don't know why this works, fellas, my battery will increase. And I'm using the gym as just a random example. It doesn't matter what it is. So the more often you can think something, say something, and do that thing, the more energy you will have and the better your life will feel, the more proud of it you will be, the more confident you will be. That's integrity. But that's like white and blue belt integrity. I like jiu-jitsu terms a lot. You want to get up purple, brown, black belt integrity? Are you in integrity with your deepest longing as a man? Are you in integrity with your soul? Meaning I can tell you I want to go to the gym. I talk about going to the gym. I go to the gym. But my soul wants me to be a poet. And I'm not writing poetry. I'm not talking poetry. I'm not doing anything. Sure, my life will be better than if I don't go to the gym. But I will still have this deep ache. I will still feel like something's not right. My human experience is not complete. And I will need to compensate for that or numb that in some way. And so I say this because I get a lot of guys, Dan, your age. They come to me and they're like, hey, here's the deal. I've been in the same company since I was 25. I'm crushing it. I have huge 401k stock options, two houses, kids are in private school. I'm like, but how you doing? They're like, it's the craziest thing. I want to flush this all down the toilet and travel, or like start a nonprofit, or like go back to school and become a teacher. And you're like, wait, you want to take a $250,000 a year pay cut? Yeah, it's literally, I'm calling you because I feel insane. Or I want to leave my wife. I don't want to stay in this marriage. I don't feel celebrated. I don't feel seen. I'm like, cool. That's soul work. That's tapping into something deeper. I hope this is making sense for guys. I get this all the time, Dan, all the time. It's like successful men. And I go, are you happy? No, I mean, let's take happy out of the equation. Are you satisfied? Like, if you died tomorrow, would you be like, hell yeah, made it to number 19 in my company? You know, third biggest bonus 2 years in a row. Sold more houses last year than anybody else in the tri-state area. Like, is that what you want from your life? And some guys like, yeah, I don't care. I want to play video games with my kids on Saturday. I want to drink beer on Sunday and watch football. I want my wife to stop nagging me. And that's literally all I want. I'm like, cool. You're in over here in a different category. But you guys who go, I don't know, man, I think there's something else out there. That's when I say, are you in integrity with your deepest longing? Do you even, have you even tapped into that? Right. I will have guys I run a workshop called Kill the Nice Guy. And it sounds more aggressive than it is. And the nice guy archetype is so often the man who doesn't even know he has wants, doesn't even know he has needs. And if I go, brother, what does your heart and soul ache for? He looks at me like I shit on my kitchen floor. I'm like, I don't even know if I'm allowed to ask for a back rub. What do you mean my heart and soul's longing? So at this stage of my career, I'm like, if you want to read about integrity, read my book. If you really want to tap into why am I here and what am I meant to do, come hang with me. Come chat with me. Come hang with my guys. This is the work we're really interested in now. But you don't get to come over here to heart and soul longing if you're still spending your evenings with your pants at your ankles jerking off to the internet because you haven't work through whatever it is that's making that okay. Or if you're lying to your wife about how much you're drinking, or you're hiding cigarettes in your glove compartment, you're out of integrity. Mm. Does this make sense? Sort of the pathway of this going down?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's a phrase I learned. You've mentioned Jung a couple times, and I've mentioned this on this show multiple times, but one of my favorite guests I've had on twice is James Hollis, who is a Jungian psychoanalyst and a prolific writer about Jungian ideas. And mm-hmm. there's a word that I know Jung was famous for that Jim has popularized called individuating, sure. Which you probably are familiar with, which is essentially what you're talking about. The idea of honoring that silent, quiet, often quiet voice mm-hmm. inside of a person beckoning you to become you know, from their perspective, who you were meant to be, who you've always been. And I think a lot of integrity often comes from honoring that, even if it seems insane or economically unwise, because of the amount of time it may have taken someone to get to a point of quote unquote success where they've achieved some things. And you know, one of the things I remember seeing you talk about in interviews I've watched of you, and I want to give you an opportunity to speak to this, you alluded to this just a minute ago, is asking men, and I think this is the basic, simple question, what do you want? What do you want? And, you know, I know in hearing you describe this in prior interviews that if you want to see a man break down, sincerely ask him that in the comfort of, you know, a supportive men's group. And I'd love to give you an opportunity to speak about, I mean, I love to have honest conversations, as honest as possible on this show. Mm-hmm. And you have a window into the lives of the private lives and true feelings and thoughts of men in a way that very few people do, particularly public people. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to open that idea up for you to have you speak in whatever length you would like about asking men that question. What do you want? And what you've learned from that question itself.
It's a game changer, man. I asked the guy this question because I knew it was kind of a dick thing to do, but I had a call with a guy a week ago who's in my nice guy program. He just joined. They get a free call with me and he's telling me about the situation with his girlfriend and all of this. He's outlining all of this chaos, all of this drama and how he thinks he wants to do. He's like, well, I don't know if this is the right thing to be in. I'm all confused. And I said, stop. What do you want? And he burst out laughing because he's like, I knew you were going to ask me that. And then he started crying. And he goes, because you're the first person who's ever asked me that. And so if we take men as a collective, we're what? We're the protectors. We're the providers. If there's a fire, who goes running into the fire? There's a burning building. Who goes running into the burning building? Who's working on the oil rigs? Who's in the military? Who's in the police force? Who's in the fire? Who's taking care of society? That's us, kind of by default. Rarely are we pulled aside and asked, what do you want for yourself? Almost never. If there's a problem in a relationship in society, whose fault is it? 9 times out of 10, it's like, what's the dude doing wrong? If there's a divorce, what's the dude doing wrong? If the woman cheated on him, what wasn't he doing to keep her? Like, this is sort of the lens through which society views men. How do we use you? You are the consumable product. We can get rid of you. We can kill you. You can do our killing and dying for us. Very rarely do we get stopped and asked, like, hey, you, brother, what do you want? What do you want for your life? I've told thousands of men, I want you to be more selfish, but I want you connected to your heart. I want you connected to your soul. So you're not just out consuming. Like, if you're not connected to your heart, you're not connected to your soul, and you hear someone say, I want you to be more selfish, you go into politics. But other than politicians, who we can talk about a whole nother deal, here's a sentence for you guys listening. When good men get their wants met, other people benefit. That idea will scramble a lot of men's brains. You hear that? When you, a good guy who's done his work, gone to some therapy, gone to some men's work, figures out who he is, worked with his shadow, isn't manipulative, is okay with the direct ask, is okay with the penetration of society, is okay with being potent. When that man gets his wants met, a lot of other people benefit. And so I personally had to sit with this as a nice guy. Who am I to want? I'm just here to give. I'm here to be of service. I'm here to provide, which is still true. But now I get to be of service. I get to be in doing the things that I want to do under the umbrella of my own wants. Dan, at some point, 7 years ago, I wanted to start a men's movement. I wanted to write a book. I wanted to give a TEDx talk. I wanted to hold workshops. That was personal. Some people would say that's selfish. Now, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people have benefited from me getting my want met. And so it's a profound and potent question for so many men because, one, they've never been asked. Or two, they've been even shamed out of, like, no, you're not in a position of wanting. You're a father. You're a husband. You're of service. This is what you do. You're not here to get it. How dare you want? Where I want to flip the script on that, completely 180 it, and say, I tell the guys in our membership every day, go get one of your wants met. Get it met for yourself. Get it met relationally. Ask your partner for it. It's okay. This is how you as a man fully express yourself. This is how you get full and resourced. This is a very, very key point. I was working with a coach myself, maybe 5 years ago, a guy named Chris Bale, if you know him, really interesting dude. And I was telling him, like, I need to be here for my people. I have employees, I have staff, I have membership group, I have a mastermind group. I need to show up for all of these guys. And I was exhausted at the time. And he goes, the number one gift you can give to every single group of people is a fully resourced you. And then my head exploded, right? I think I like passed out. Because that was not what I had heard for 44 years of my life. It was give, 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 give. If you're exhausted, you're doing great. Hustle culture, you're doing great. Are your adrenals blown out? Amazing. Just push right through that. What do you need right now? You need another Red Bull. You need to be working 7 hours. I mean, God bless Gary Vee, but he kind of fucked a lot of people up. And a lot of men, if I said, hey, man, imagine taking 3 days off and having so much energy and so much creative juice and so much sexual vitality that every single person in your life was like, oh my God, you're incredible to be around. I feel good just in your presence. I feel inspired just by your presence. That would be a mind fuck for a lot of guys. As opposed to the alarm goes off, you slam 4 cups of coffee, you drive to work and eat a donut, you work 10 hours for a boss who's yelling at you, you come home, you crack a beer, you sit on the couch, you get as numb as you possibly can because you know you have to repeat the whole thing again. Is that what you want? Now we have to balance this a tiny bit with responsibility. Right? I have a lot of dads in my life. I had a lot of husbands in my life. And he was like, you know what I want to do? I want to move to Costa Rica and start a surf ranch. I'm like, okay, I get it. But your kids are 9 months and 2 years. Can you do that? Would it be responsible? Do you have the financial means? Is it doable? Or is it just a pipe dream? And so you go, cool. How do you get that met, that want partially met? Can you take 2 weeks this year, go down there and surf? Right? Will that scratch the itch? I want to be a musician. Okay, you're an accountant with 5 kids. Can you play an open mic this weekend and see what it feels like to play the guitar in front of a lot of people and get that itch scratched and that nourishment? You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So Dan, I'm fully interested in men knowing what they want, because also, how else can you be authentic in relationship if you don't know what you want? I ask a lot of guys, like, why are you in this marriage? I don't know. Well, shit. What if you found out your partner didn't know why she was in it? Wouldn't that be disconcerting? I don't know. We went on 3 dates. We had sex and then we were just sort of together. Like, what? Why are you here? So there's a lack of intentionality around so many men. And that causes the problems that we see in society. That causes the problems that those men experience in their personal lives. The mission of Uncivilized is to end the unnecessary suffering in men so that we end the suffering caused by men. Now, if you're a guy in a marriage who doesn't know why he's there and wants to have a closer relationship with his wife and wants to have a deeper connection and wants to have more sex and wants to have a deeper connection with his kids, but is afraid to admit that and own it and then take the steps to make that happen, I guarantee you he's got an interesting internet history. I guarantee you he's got alcohol in the fridge that he doesn't want to drink, that he's drinking. I guarantee you he's having a side conversation with someone at work who's a woman who makes him feel connected and like there's depth and intimacy there. All of those things will blow that man's life up. They will blow his kids' lives up. They will blow his wife's life up. Do you see why wants are important now? Long answer to a short question, but does that all make sense?
It does. It does. And I, you know, I'm thinking about the men that might be listening to this who are, you know, in a relationship that in which they have never been asked the question or asserted the answer to what they want with their girlfriend, their wife, and they're scared because if they do begin to kill the nice guy, as your program labels it, and assert the fact that they have certain needs that they need to, that need to be met in order for them to be the best version of themselves. That's a different paradigm, a different dynamic than they've operated in previously. And there is undeniably a risk that if he is firm in that assertion, it could blow everything up. And
sure,
I'd love for you to talk about, talk to men who may be in a situation like that, as perhaps you were earlier in your life, without asserting that those needs, there's essentially a slow spiritual death,
for sure,
that is occurring within men when they lack that ability to ask for what they need. And so how might you address, and I'm sure you have with many of the people you've worked with who are in marriages where they have been the perpetual nice guy, they mm-hmm. have never, they've always been solely the giver. They view their life as solely a provider, not someone who, you used the word shame earlier. And I think there's a mm-hmm. huge aspect to shame in men not feeling like they have the right to ask for things that they need.
For sure.
How would you, or how do you address men who might be in a situation like that, and they know they're not living in integrity, they know they have wants that are not being met, but they don't feel like they've never asserted themselves in that way, and they don't know what to do?
You take your time, first and foremost. Like, the last thing I would want is someone to come off of this, listen to this podcast, make a list of 10 things that they want in their relationship or marriage, their 20-year marriage, sit their wife down and be like, okay, here you go, Susan. This is how things are going to be from now on, or I'm out of here. I just listened to these two guys talk and boom, are you ready? Read the list. Okay, we good? Let's go. Some of the tenets of uncivilized: raw, real, and here's the biggie, relational. You and your partner have a contract. It was either implicit or explicit. Most of the time it's implicit. Like, we don't usually sit down in an unconscious relationship and be like, hey, here are my wants, here are my needs, here's where I see myself, here's what I want from you, here's what I think will work best, here's what I'm here to provide. We don't. We just sort of end up together, right? That happens in so many relationships. I don't know. We just sort of ended up here. And the patterns and the habits that get set just sort of ended up happening, right? Like, I don't know. We just haven't had sex in a year and we don't really talk about it. Or like, she does this, she does the dishes, I walk the kids. Like, I don't know. We just sort of ended up here. I view that as a contract. So just like a business contract, if I had a boss and I went into my boss and was like, hey man, new deal. I get 50 grand more a year. I take Fridays off and I'm not wearing pants in the office. Cool. We good on this? Or I'm out of here. He'd be like, get the fuck out of here. But if I sat him down and said, hey, I love this company. I love working for you. I want to be here for the long run. But there's some things that I would really love to see change around here that will make me a better employee, that will make me a better person, and that will produce a better outcome for everybody here. Here's what they are. I would love to open a dialogue where we talk about these things and see how we both feel about them. Now, what's under the surface of that, Dan, is that man has done his work first, where he goes, this is what's non-negotiable to me anymore. Most guys have zero non-negotiables, where they should. Because, and this is a different avenue, because we're the pursuers of relationship, not the pursuees, we don't think we get to show up with anything that's ours. It's like, oh my God, I'm so lucky I caught the prize. I won the game. That's the whole game. I'm the pursuer. Or if it was the opposite, imagine if women were the ones after us and we could say, hey, actually, you know what? Like, this thing doesn't work with me. This doesn't work for me. I love that you chased me down and tackled me, but like, I'm not really interested in someone who doesn't play golf or doesn't like the ocean. Have a great life. But because we're the pursuers, we don't often have our own wants, needs, and non-negotiables. So this is what I had to do in my own relationship. This will probably help just to give it an example. When I got divorced, I sat down and was like, okay, what do I want? What do I don't want? What are these are like, I will not have this, period. This one's hit or miss. This one I really don't care about. And I had a list of things, but they were things that were important to me. I'm going to have open and honest dialogue. I'm in the BDSM world. I'm going to have kinky sex with a partner who wants to have that. I'm an entrepreneur. I want to be with someone who works for herself because I don't want to say, hey, let's go to Europe for 2 weeks tomorrow and have my partner go, I don't know. I have to ask my boss, right? I want to eat healthy. That's a non-negotiable for me. I don't want to be with someone who drinks or smokes cigarettes. Like these are just some of them. And so when I was dating, I would say quite honestly, like, hey, by the way, this is what's important to me. This is what's not. This is sort of give or take. And there were so many women who were like, but I'm not interested in number three. I'm like, cool. Shake hands. Have a great rest of your evening. As opposed to what do so many guys do? Here's my sort of kind of made up list, but man, you are beautiful. Let me crumple it up and throw it behind me and go, how do you want me to be in this relationship? So the frame changes. The frame says what's more important to me than being in relationship, period, is being in a relationship that fits and works with me. Because the opposite is what you just talked about, which is, I would say, the more common relational structure, which is I will endure this as my soul slowly dies. For whatever reason, men are in the enduring phase of relationship. We call, like, it's classic, the old ball and chain, right? I need to go home and check in with the general. What are you, a fucking grown-ass man? Or are you not a grown-ass man? So just that frame that we have of, like, and it's in society, right? It's in sitcoms. It's in rom-coms that, like, the beautiful, smart, intelligent woman and the do-do-do-do dumb guy. We're turning that on its head. And men now saying, hey, I want to stay in this relationship, but I need to be seen. I need to be met. I need to be honored. I need to be celebrated. Those were four big things for me. I don't care who is on the other side of my relationship partnership. If she doesn't do those four things, she's not for me. And I'm going to age myself here. Like, I don't care if that's Cindy Crawford or Shakira or Dolly Parton. Like, I don't care who you are in the world. If you're not going to see me, meet me, respect me, and celebrate me, you're not for me. Now, how many guys enter a relationship like that? Or as opposed to, like, oh my God, are those real? Do you see that smile? She did that little thing when we made out. That was fucking cool. No one's ever done that before. I think I'll give her all my shit. Here, take everything. Tell me who do I need to be with you so I keep getting access to this? That's the frame. That's the switch. So a guy in relationship, you have to figure out what you want. You have to figure out what you need. You have to figure out what's negotiable to you and non-negotiable. And then, brother, you got to step up to the plate and say to yourself and to the man in the mirror, I'm going to actively abandon and betray myself in the name of staying in this relationship, or I'm not. Then there's the skill part, Dan, which is, how do you present this to a partner? Kind of like what I talked about with the conversation with a boss. If you have a real partner, someone who wants to be with you through the long haul, someone who's interested in being relational, then you have a conversation in a relational way, one of many, to change the contract, and that person isn't interested in what you're presenting. I know it's going to cause chaos. I know it's going to cause change. I know it's going to cause disruption, but I believe that relationship is not sustainable. And what will end up happening when men stay in unsustainable relationships, because I usually get the phone call after the fact, is they've had an affair. They're drinking too much. They crashed a car. They've done something to end the relationship without choosing consciously to end the relationship, right? They have to compensate for the lack of getting their needs met in unconscious or shadow ways. right? What we say it uncivilized, what we suppress comes out sideways. You will get your needs met. I guarantee you, you will get your needs met. Whether you do it above board or below board, you will get your needs met. And so really it's about men rising and saying, hey, I'm no longer willing to have a sex life that only exists on the internet when I'm married. I would rather not be married than have that. I would rather not be such and such than just get to tell everybody I'm in a marriage for the sake of being in a marriage. And there's a lot of pressure to be in a marriage. So I get that there's like, that's a big deal. And then the asterisk to this, or the caveat to this, is I know a lot of men who will actually put their own hopes, dreams, wants, needs, and desires to the side because they have kids. And I respect that if it's a conscious choice. But at some point, brothers, those needs, wants, and desires will need to be picked back up. I get it. You got a sick parent. You got a sick kid. You can't be like, oh, I want to just jog around the world and sleep with whoever I want. I get that. I totally, totally get that. There are times when we do have to put our heads down and go, you know what? It's not about me right now. But if it's not one of those times, here's the best way to say it, man. I've had a partner come to me and say, hey, this isn't working with me anymore, for me anymore. I love you and I want to make these changes so that we can stay together. My ego, for like a fraction of a second, was like, well, fuck this. Who do you know who I am? Like, talk to the hand. But my heart and soul were like, wow, thank you. Thank you, other human who I'm spending my life with, for coming to me in a kind and open-hearted manner and saying, hey, this isn't really working for me anymore. Because now I have enough information for me to make a conscious choice. She also has information for her to make a conscious choice. When we lie to our partners, when we hide from our partners, when we don't talk about our needs with our partners, all for good reasons, for fear of rejection, for fear of being shut down, because we did 5 years ago and it was thrown back in our face, we're not giving our partners choice. And we actually aren't making a conscious choice. We're simply saying everything else is more important than who I am and what I'm about. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And
this is big stuff, Dan. I love the question. Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks.
It's not simple, right? I'm not going to tell a guy in a 20-year marriage, like, go tell your wife you're going to have sex twice a week or you're out in 2 weeks. It's dumb and it's unskillful. But I have had a number of men, and sex is always like the canary. It's the easiest one to talk about. I've had plenty of men where I've said, do you want to live a sexless life? Do you want celibacy? And they say, no. Okay. Do you feel like you've tried everything you can try with your wife? And they say, yes. And they say, okay, now you have a choice to make, but you got to live with that choice. And I don't want you griping and whining about that choice, because it's the choice you've made. Where most guys won't make the choice. They just sort of collapse. Like, I wish it was better. I wish it was different. I'll post about it on the internet, or I'll bitch to you because I'm paying you. Like, no. You choose your life. I don't want to go into too much of a tangent. My father died 3 weeks ago. I worked in hospice for a year. Brothers listening to this, life is short. And I have a funny feeling, you'll find this, Dan, that after 40, it gets a lot faster. Really weird. Like, time flies. The days are long, right? What was I saying? The days are long, but the years are short. You don't get another shot at this. You gotta pick yourself up and go, yeah, I may have to deconstruct some things. I may have to lose some things. But I don't know about you, man. The way I've oriented my life after losing everything was, I'm going to point and direct myself towards aliveness, towards potency, towards service, and towards authenticity. And that, let the chips fall where they may. If I end up broke, alone, living under a bridge, I'll take that, because my inner world will be okay. But very, very, very few times have I ever seen that. What I have seen, which was my own case, people say, don't open a men's organization. Men don't buy anything. Don't write a men's book. Nobody will buy it. Go back to doing what you were doing. Don't follow your heart. And I did the opposite. And I've never been richer or more abundant or more satisfied or more content with my life. And I'm not saying that that didn't come with a shit ton of work, a lot of consultants, a lot of late nights typing and work, and a lot of mistakes. But I would rather fail on the path than like thrive off of it.
I think that's very well put. And I think what is needed before a commitment like that is courage, is the ability to, you know, commit to a path that others may not understand or think is irresponsible in some way, for men largely economically. And you know, I, as you were just speaking there, there was a line when I talked to Robert Glover about a month or two ago that kept coming to mind, which is choose a woman who chooses you. Choose a woman who chooses you, which I think is such a short but important just North Star to keep in mind as men are trying to figure out that area of their life. And another area, the first time I interviewed Robert Glover, I asked him if he had one piece of advice, what would that advice be? And he said, seek male tribe. And we've danced around this a little bit during this conversation, but I'd love to open it up to have you talk about the importance of, you know, having good men in one's life, in your life, and especially the guys that you deal with, because, you know, again, as I've gotten older, it seems so simple and so clear that if you have a tribe, a male tribe, a support system, people you can go to that know who you really are, that you can be honest with, who can give you feedback when necessary, if you seek that out, the rewards from that, it helps in so many areas of life. I'd love to just put that to you and have you speak again at whatever length you would like about, if you agree with that assessment, how important you feel like in your life and the lives of men that you work with, having a male tribe is to, you know, living with integrity and living a flourishing life.
I believe there's two groups of men in the world, men who have a men's tribe and men who don't. And it's that clear, it's that black and white. The guys who do will be held to their own highest standard. Get that? You set the standard, those other men are going to be right there with you going, hey man, remember when you said you were going to do this thing? We're not seeing you do it, and we love you enough to bring this up. So talk to us. What are you going to do? That's for the like above zero. Hey, do you want to do something extraordinary with your life? Get men around you. Get grounded energy around you. That's a big idea. Because what comes up in our lives over and over and over and over again, simply by the nature of life, is chaos, is loss, is turbulence, is disruption, is something coming through and going, oh, okay, let me just topple your world for a minute. When that happens, this is the below zero part, and you have strong hands to be like, hey man, we got you. Don't worry about this. We're here with you. It's going to suck for a little while. We're going to be honest with you, but guess what? You don't have to do it alone. And you're also going to get supported. You're going to get resources. You have access to our resources, whether that's physical, financial, emotional, network, whatever it is. We're in this together. You get to have a team. Anybody who's ever played a team sport knows it's not 1 + 1 = 2. It's like 5 + 5 = 1,000. That's the beauty of men's work. I just told you about my dad. I probably get 6 to 7 messages a day. Now, even a month later, hey, just checking in on you, man. How you doing? Drop us a number. Let me know. 1 to 10. How you doing? Hey, anything you need today? Hey, just checking in. Little wellness check. How you doing? Right. And I'm good. I'm solid. I feel I'm okay. Everything's great. I'm moving. So there's some turbulence. Hey, you're moving this weekend. 4 of us are going to come help pack your house. Cool. It's going to take me 1/8 of the time. And it's not just for efficiency. And it's not just for mental health. It's the whole picture. Do you see that? Isolation is what's killing us. Self-abandonment is what's killing us. Collapse is what's killing us. You don't get to isolate. You don't get to self-abandon. You don't get to collapse when there's strong, powerful, integrous men around you. You don't get to fall into the traps that so many men fall into and don't come out. Does this make sense? It doesn't mean that you don't get to have mistakes. It doesn't mean that there aren't dark chapters. It doesn't mean that life is suddenly going to be sunshines and kittens and rainbows. Shit's going to happen, right? One of the most powerful, how do we describe it, scenarios that I've been in. I was in a men's group, Dan, and one of the guys, it was found out, was really out of integrity with women, really far out of integrity, and was also a prominent public figure. So word got to us, like, hey, the New York Times is going to get called tomorrow, and his life is going to go down the drain. His ex-wife's going to get his kids, his books are going to go under, he's going to get canceled. What, unless you guys want to step in and do something about this? It was a group of women who'd gotten together. Like, holy shit, can you imagine this guy's life without us? Boom, it would be essentially over. We held a gathering, put him right in the middle. Hey man, guess what? We know what you're doing. And this was the most impactful sentence I've probably ever heard in my life. One of the guys, tears in his eyes, friend of his, stood up and said, I love you too much to let you live this far out of integrity. I don't care about you being canceled. I don't care about the financial ramifications. I love you too much to let you live a life that's a lie for who you are. Boom. Right? We had his access to his phone. We had access to his Instagram. He had to get into counseling. That dude is now remarried with another kid. His life is great. Did he have to go through some hard shit and figure some stuff out about why he was acting that way? He certainly did. That's just one instance of thousands, right? I had a gathering of the Uncivilized Nation 2 weeks ago, and one of the guys literally stood up and said, I'm still alive because of this group. I lost my cousin a year ago, committed suicide, my age, dude, wife, two kids. Has me as a cousin, my phone, my phone number and his phone, no men's group. And I'm not saying that's the only reason, but I go, man, imagine if he had eight guys around him who for the year when he was struggling, were like, hey, we got you. We got you. We got you. We got you. Hey, here's a rehab we're taking you to. Hey, come hang with us tonight. We're just going to sit around a fire and tell stories, right? That there's so many layers to this. When I have business questions, I am not a businessman. I'm a writer, an acupuncturist, and a cage fighter who suddenly created a seven-figure business. You know how many times I reach out to guys in my men's group? I'm like, I know you have five MBAs. You're in your 60s. You've seen everything. That, like, what do I do in this scenario? And suddenly I have business mentors. I have an issue with my woman. I get on the phone with one of the guys who's 70. Who's in my men's group, who's been married four times. I'm like, I know you've been around this block a couple times. Maybe I shouldn't go to you for advice, but I'm coming to you for advice. What do I do here? And I get to go hiking this weekend with a bunch of guys. I get to go shoot guns next weekend with a bunch of guys. I'm not saying women aren't fun to hang out with or that you shouldn't have women in your life, but there's this core element that when men get in a room with other men, our energy syncs up in some way and the truth comes out. I can say things in the men's group I don't want to say to my partner, and I say it there first and I get their feedback. We use the cliche like iron sharpens iron, but there's a difference between someone whose shoulders are as broad as mine, who can look me in the eye, who I can feel the ferocity and the intensity and the love standing in front of me. When he says, hey, you can do better than you're doing, it hits me in a different place than when my beautiful woman stands in front of me and goes, hey, you can do better than you're doing. I don't know why. And there's probably a biological reason or a hormonal reason, or I don't know, like a sociologist or a doctor will probably tell you why better than I can. I just know it works. Right. And I definitely know for any heterosexual men listening to this, challenges you have with your woman, which we will have, when those challenges first get brought to a group of men, intelligent, articulate, emotionally intelligent men, they will give you advice that actually works. What was the advice I got 2 days after my ex-wife left from the collective? Let's get you drunk. Let's get you laid. Fortunately, I quit drinking the day she left and was like, I don't want to be confused. I don't want to have sex with anybody. Like, please, I do not want any of this. Had I been in a men's group, because I've been in men's groups where guys found out the day before their wife was leaving, what do you think they're telling them to do? Get your gym membership. Start eating clean. Get a therapist right now. Don't fuck anybody. Quit drinking. And dig in, like, just different. You see, like, I can give you 50 examples, you know, this of all the ways it really, really benefits and pays off. And I'm just going to say, dudes are fun. We're just fun. Every time I get a phone call, like, hey, five of us are going whitewater rafting. Do you want to come? Three of us just hired a helicopter. We want to do this. You want to come? Hey, there's this 20-mile hike. We think we're going to throw 30-pound rucks on and see if we can do it without breaking our ankles. Do you want to come? Like, I love women, but they don't call me and ask if I want to jump out of an airplane. I'm sure there are women who are listening who are now upset. They're like, I jump out of airplanes. But on the whole, it just makes life fun, man. I loved being a 12-year-old, right? Why? Because I had a little skateboard gang. Now I'm 48 with like a giant international skateboard gang. So I cut you off.
No, yeah. Well, and I have to imagine for a lot of guys that are listening to this, this all sounds great. You use the word isolation a couple of times. And yeah. I don't know, just in my own little micro life, that's what I see a lot is men, for whatever reason, completely self-isolating. I see this in myself in various phases of my own life. And for men who just heard what you said and are interested in, you know, over time getting those sort of men around them, how would you recommend that they go about finding them? And you know, please feel free to recommend what you offer with your groups, but in general, sure. Where would you point men to who are nodding their head as you're speaking to the isolation of modern men and the need that they will have as a turbulent life, you know, inevitably comes their way, to have men that they want to be around in their life? Where would you direct them? How would you recommend that they go about trying to find that?
We're the uncivilized nations. You can go to manuncivilized.com/the nation. We have 40 groups all over the world. And you don't have to be with us. There's so many men's groups right now. There's so many good men's groups. So you can Google men's group near me. What you're going to get primarily, I found, is some religious organization that has a men's group. A lot of them have an orientation that way. And that's okay. If you're like, hey, I'm a Christian and I want to hang out with other Christian men, beautiful. Tons of groups for you. If you're a Jewish man, you want to hang out with other tons of that. If you're non-denominational or agnostic, find us, find the nation, find Connor Beaton's The Alliance, right? There are all kinds of Mankind Project. There's no excuse now to not be a part of one. We have over 300 guys in online membership. Is it the same as getting to hug and shake hands? No. Do they get to do that once or twice a year or find ways to meet each other? Absolutely. Is it better than sitting in your house alone? Absolutely. It's a weird thing, Dan, to get support. For a lot of guys, it's confronting. It was confronting for me. I wasn't used to it. It felt odd. It felt like I would owe them something or someone was trying to manipulate me because I grew up without it. Now I can't imagine my life without it. Right? I just can't imagine it. And I can't imagine my life without the friendship, without the camaraderie, without the brotherhood. So even if you're like, hey, my life's great, I'm just alone, I'm just lonely. Mm-hmm. That's such a real thing. We can talk for another half hour about how tech, the lack of a third place, how the business environment has shifted. We used to hang out with each other a lot. Just in the last 10 years, that's slowly shifted. Then COVID hit and no one hung out at all. And now it's kind of weird that like we're not really sure what to do about being social again. But most men, it was around what? The water cooler. I hang out with the guys at work. Or it's like my kids' friends, but a lot of people aren't having kids. A lot of people aren't in relationship. So guys listening to this, it's all available and it will require a little bit of effort on your part. What used to happen, Dan, was work provided it, or it was like I hang out with my wife's friends' husbands. And guys just like, I didn't really have to do anything. There were just sometimes dudes around. I don't really like them, but now you actually have to do the work. But the work is so easy to do to find it. So manuncivilized.com/the nation, or again, Google men's group near me, and then go test them out, right? We have guys that come from other men's groups and join us and like, I just didn't like what they were about, or I didn't like the feel. We have guys that have come join with us. 3 months later, they go to another men's organization. We're like, cool. Find your people. If we're not the right flavor for you, find someone who is. So test these things out. Go sit in on a meeting. Go join one of their online things. Call the owner. Have a conversation. You want to like these guys. You want to get along with, like, you feel like you fit, feel like they're your people. But brothers, hear me. I know I'm on the inside of this, but I've got 1,000 testimonials from men who say, like, being around other conscious men has changed and or saved my life. And those are big sentences. That's what we're doing here. That's the work here. The tide is rising, right? Like, guys are now realizing, oh shit, the way the world is constellated right now, it's not good for us. Sitting in front of a computer alone at your desk all day long by yourself and then watching TV, that's not good for you. Being separated from relationship, that's not good for you. Here in the US, we have the lowest number of marriages, lowest number of relationships, lowest amount of sex we've ever had on recorded history. That's not good for us. That will lead to anxiety, depression, Alzheimer's, addiction, challenges. It's not good. But what used to happen was men were like, well, no one really cares about me anyway, so fuck it. I'll just go down slowly with the ship. And that has to stop. It's time for us to actually go, okay, I have sovereignty. I have agency. I'm not happy about this thing in my life. I'm going to change it. That's the call in 2024. You're not happy? Do something about it. Not satisfied? Do something about it. Don't have friends? Do something about it. And keep doing something about it until you get the result that you want. Don't quit when you hit your first roadblock.
Man, this has been an incredible conversation. And, you know, I'd love to do this again if we can find time in the future to connect. I thought maybe I would close on, you know, so much of what you're recommending, which I think is such great advice, does require a level of, you know, vulnerability with other guys that, and I know you write a lot about generationally the difference in American history of what was expected from men, and how you write about the Marlboro man as an archetype, and how that, you know, to become more conscious and to evolve as men, being more vulnerable is a prerequisite to benefit from all of the things that you just said, you know, not becoming a sobbing mess, but just being willing to recognize the need for other guys in your life, and to be honest about what you might be going through. And I thought maybe to close, I'd love to have you talk in any other detail that you might like to share about the changes in transformation in yourself. You've already talked about the change in your own energy and the purpose that it sounds like you feel in your life. You write a lot about the heart and being in touch with your emotions and being in touch with your heart. And maybe that would be a great spot to close on, is to have you give any more detail that you might like about the difference in the person you are now from who you were 8 years ago in any way, but especially in the realm of the emotions of the heart in general.
For sure. It's night and day, Dan. It's like the best way I can describe my pre-life and this life is 8 years ago, I looked through the world, or looked through a lens at the world, and felt the world in black and white. Imagine a 1950s, 40s black and white TV. It's grainy. There's no color. There's no vibrancy. It doesn't feel alive. Like, you can tell you're watching TV. I have an HD whatever in this Airbnb that I'm in right now, and I watched sports on it the other day, and was like, I feel like I'm on the damn field as a guy almost 50. This is freaking me out. It's that right? Like, you feel like you could reach through the screen and touch people, especially with sports. That's how I feel like my life is now. It went from black and white to HD color, because there was this part of my body, the entirety from my neck down to my pelvis, that I was cut off from for the first 40 years of my life, or numb to emotion, feeling, color, shapes, energy, texture, right? So now I feel the world. I wake up and I put my hand on my heart and I take a deep breath. I'm like, man, how am I feeling today? When I sit across from people, when I sat across from first dates, partners, business partnerships, friends, 10 years ago, it was from the neck up. What am I going to say next? What are they saying? How do I analyze this? What am I thinking? Now it's from the neck down. Ooh, that feels good. Wow, I can really feel that. Man, they feel tense. Huh, something's going on inside of me in this conversation. So it's literally like giving yourself access to a whole different side of life. One that intuitively, gentlemen, you know exists and you want, but it's also risky and it's new, it's different. It's not cool. It's not celebrated by society until you get to a certain point. We're celebrated for thinking. He's a great mind. He's got a brilliant mind, right? That guy, look what he achieved. Listen to his thoughts. That's a very wise guy. How often do we hear, ooh, you know, he got hired? That guy can feel everything. He's a deep feeler. We don't do that. We bypass our bodies.
For so many men, relationally, I don't want to think my way through my relationship. And I certainly am not going to be with a thinking person, because that's not a woman. A woman is a feeler. I want to feel her. I want to feel what I'm eating. Not just taste it. I want to feel it. I mean, it's such a challenging thing to put words to. But guys, like, think of a great day in your life, and not the best day, not the day you won the lottery or you made $100,000 or you got, like, think of a day where you were like at the beach, or you were walking on a hike and you're like, man, this is amazing. There was no explosions. There was none of the things that we usually say are the trappings of society, but you felt good in your body. That to me is the ultimate study. And the ultimate practice, Dan, embodiment. Like, is it in your body? That is the level of where I want guys. Right? I did this exercise. I hope this makes sense explaining it. I did this 3 weeks ago with a group of nice guys. I had them line up in front of another line of men and give a directive. John, come over here. That was it. That's all I had to say, one by one by one. I had the other guy on the other side close his eyes and say, could you feel it? Did you feel the authenticity? Or was it rushed? Did it fall? Was it like, John, come over here? You can hear that that's not the same as, John, come over here. But I wanted them just to feel it. And I would ask them, okay, something they did, they'd nail it. Like the guy would nail it. John, come over here. John would take 5 steps forward. Like, John, what happened there? He goes, I don't know. I just felt like it was the right thing to do. Or I felt it was authentic. I felt it was connected. I felt it was relational. Do you hear the word I'm using, Dan? I'm not saying I thought it was connected. I thought it was relational. I felt it. Hmm. So this embodiment is the highest level for men, for our energy, for our potency, for our confidence, for our primality, for our sexuality, for our creativity. It lives in our bodies. And so 8 years ago, I was cut off from that, 10 years ago. This is how my day went. I would wake up. Before I left the bed, I would chug a 5-hour energy. I would go take a shit, get in the car, chug another one. So now I'm high as a kite on caffeine. Would go teach my morning CrossFit classes. Then I would work out as hard as I possibly could to the point of throwing up. Then I wouldn't eat. I would work for the rest of the day. I would smoke a joint on the drive home. That's familiar to a lot of guys, right? Like caffeine, not a lot of nourishment, some kind of numbing agent. I'd go home and crack a beer because I couldn't live a life disconnected from my body and disconnected from feeling. Now I don't drink. Now I don't smoke dope. Yes, I still drink coffee, but I'm not waking up and chugging 4 cups of it to be like, okay, I'm okay in the world. I'm okay in the world. Men need to be able to sit in a room by themselves and be okay. In order to do that, we have to be in relationship with ourselves. In order to be in relationship with ourselves, we have to be able to feel ourselves. In order to feel anybody else, we have to be able to feel ourselves. I know this may sound esoteric, but you've done it. I guarantee you, everybody on this call at some point has done it. You've walked into a room where 2 people were just fighting and you knew something was off. That's you feeling the room because you can feel your body. Now, one last point. You've asked about feeling your heart. This will change everything for men. If we could all feel our hearts, society would crumble. Because we wouldn't work 80 hours a week to buy a Porsche that we're hopefully going to use to get laid. We'd be like, I don't care about any of this. I want to go fishing. I don't care about any of this. I want to hang out with my boys and play poker. I don't care about any of this. I want to take my kids to a park and let their laughter fill my soul. We wouldn't be sold shit. Also, our relationships would be radically different because most men are so in their heads and so in their egos in a relationship that they've lost touch of this thing in the middle of their chest that forces you to care about the entire experience the other person in relationship with you is having. It also forces you to care about the entire experience that you are having. So having access to it is how you access joy. My teaching partner, Michael Gay, says he hopes for an epidemic of joy in men's lives. And think of how that would crush things. I mean, less video games, less weed, less, no one would be on all supporting OnlyFans, wouldn't be banging hookers. We wouldn't be, if we just had an epidemic of joy, it'd change everything. But mostly what it would change is our relationships. And so I know if I get in a challenge with my partner, I was raised by an attorney. He was also an engineer. My instinct is to go, okay, well, let's build the case up here in the head. Really good at this. Let's figure out all the facts as to why she's wrong. And then present this to her. And that'll go great. We've all done that. Or I can drop down into my heart and go, oh man, I have a live human being in front of me who's upset. Whew. Okay, come here. Give me a hug. I love you. I get this. It's scary. It's upsetting. That's a superpower to me now. Does that make sense? I hope you guys listen to this, right? most men who have kids, like when your two-year-old comes running up to you with a skinned knee crying, you're like, oh, fuck, this is brutal. I wish I could take this pain away. You're not like, hey, let's bust out a biology book and see how the epidermis is going to replenish itself. And in 6 to 8 weeks, you won't have this scab on your knee anymore. Your kid would be like, what on earth are you talking about, you psychopath? Hug me. That's what it's like to be in your heart. When you just wrap your arms around your kid, you're like, I get it. Oh, man, that must hurt so bad. Don't worry. Let me give it a kiss. Let me give it a magic kiss. That's us in our hearts. Now, navigating a world that doesn't want you in your heart and being in your heart is the ultimate challenge. And I'll tell you, there are times when I go, all right, fuck it. I'm disconnecting from that thing. I have a job to do. Right? But that's very, very rare. As opposed to what most men do is go, oh man, I'm going to be forced into my art in this particular instance. I'd rather it's 98 in your heart, 2% not, than 2% in 98 not. That will change your life. It'll change your mental health. It'll change your relationship. It'll change your relationship with your kids. And it will change how you interact in the world deeply and profoundly as a human and as a man.
Amen, bro. I think that's a great place to stop. This was such a pleasure, and I think you're doing such important work, and I really appreciate the time and all of the advice and feedback you've given. Like I said, I really hope we might be able to connect at some point in the future, but lovely to meet you, and thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Keep Talking. If you're finding value in this podcast, please consider supporting the show via the links below on Venmo, PayPal, or Patreon. Your support helps to make these conversations possible.